You've probably seen it in the news. You're probably hearing it as well here on WICC, a lawsuit claiming that Central Connecticut State University terminated an employee over her tuberculosis diagnosis. So the woman in this case says she contracted the bacterial infection from a student while working as a specialist at the university. The complaint claims that the school violated federal law banning discrimination against people with disabilities. Her attorney representing her happens to be a contributor to this show. Attorney Gary Phelan is back with us with Hurwitz, Sagarin, and Slossberg right here in Milford, also a law professor at Quinnipiac University. And Gary, welcome to the show. Talk to us a little bit about this case and your client.
My client in this case, she had had 9 years of outstanding reviews as a program specialist with the intensive language program or intensive English language program at Central Connecticut. She learned that she had contracted tuberculosis from a student. And 6 weeks after she learned that, she was terminated. And so we're alleging that the reason she was terminated was because of the diagnosis. So we believe it's a violation of both the Americans with Disabilities Act as well as the state law called the Connecticut Fair Employment Practices Act.
Now, in this case, Gary, and obviously you would know it way better than I would, but when I was reading about this, I believe your client did give the college a few names, maybe of people who could have been in contact with and how she could have gotten her diagnosis. Does that violate, though, the student's rights under HIPAA?
No. What happened is actually the college gave the New Britain Public Health Department names of people she may have been or the student may have been in contact with. And it's up to the and then the department reached out to her to let her know she should get tested. The problem in this case, we think, is that at least from what our client was told, there was only a handful of people that the college disclosed that these people should be contacted. And, particularly in the case of tuberculosis, it's a very serious disease.
Yeah.
And, for example, at University of Wisconsin at Madison, last year there was a student diagnosed with tuberculosis. The school notified over 700 people, that they may have been in contact with someone. It's not a violation of HIPAA as long as you don't reveal the student's name. And so, it's an example of where public health is really intertwined with the rights of employees, or in this case, a student. But it is something that, again, it's better to err on the side of caution. And it's something our client is very concerned about people who may have never been notified, who may have been in contact with the student.
So I guess let me clarify here, or could you clarify for me, Gary? So in this situation, because of my understanding with tuberculosis is that's something that's spread through the air, right? So if that's the case, are you looking for the student who has this? And if so, is this obviously you're talking about a wrongful termination case, but is the goal here to also kind of make an example of, look, if you have something, you tested positive for something, your kind of moral obligation to either let people know or to avoid being in contact with other people? I mean, is it just a wrongful termination case that you're looking at? Or does this also kind of, I would say, lead to an example of the severity of if you test positive for an airborne or, a bacterial infection like this, that you need to inform people or you need to stay away from people?
No, it's not. The case is really focused on just the rights of our client. The obligation of it's not up to the student. It's really up to both the college as well as the public health department as far as informing people. To the extent it might be relevant in this case is whether or not a desire to keep this as quiet as possible was somehow involved and related to the decision to terminate our client. But there really isn't any legal claims with respect to either the student or the college, that's really up to them. But people do get diagnosed with conditions. The question is, what does a college or in some cases an employer do about it?
Mm-hmm. And we're talking to Gary Phelan, who's an attorney with Hurwitz, Sagarin in Slossburg right here in Milford. I wanted to talk generally, if you don't mind, Gary, about people who disclose medical conditions. Do you often represent clients and kind of advise them on whether or not to disclose a medical condition at work?
Yes, because of the amount, I do quite a bit of work with respect to persons with disabilities. Just as an example, yesterday, I was advising two individuals, one who was being compelled to do a medical exam because of the effects of a medical impairment, and the employer is saying, you have to go to a medical exam. In another case of whether to disclose a serious illness as part of a request for accommodation. So these issues do come up often.
So you brought up accommodation. If a person needs an accommodation for a medical condition, what do they need to say to an employer?
Well, they need to first make the request. It's not up to the employer to figure out whether or not the person needs an accommodation. The individual has to disclose it, but they also, as part of that disclosure, to describe, what the condition is or the really the effects of the impairment. And, the employer has a right to make inquiry. Now, balance with that is the employer, it can only be disclosed on a kind of a need-to-know basis. Let's say the HR department or the employee's supervisor. And it's not really, it can't go beyond those, that limited need to know basis. And I in counseling clients really err on the side of maybe sometimes providing too much information, because often, employers may say, we didn't know what they didn't really tell us anything. And it's a hard thing, and something I work with clients about how do you balance the individual's privacy rights, particularly things they may not want to disclose, with the need for accommodation. And so you can't have it both ways. And sometimes the employer has a right to request, for example, a diagnosis from the individual's doctor.
Gary Phelan is here with us, attorney with Hurwitz, Sagarin in Slossburg in Milford, also a law professor at Quinnipiac University, and he talks a lot about employment law. And, we're talking about disclosing medical conditions. I want to, if you don't mind, Gary, kind of talk about something else, which has to do with mental health. So I think it's one thing if you have, I'm not saying physical is that we don't write a fine line of what you do and don't need to tell your employers. But the mental health aspect, I think, is interesting because, like, for example, therapy, if you're going to therapy or you have to use medication for what would be considered a mental health, issue, is that something you have to disclose to your employer? Does it depend on the job that you do?
Generally, it's not something that you have to disclose, and it's not something I would encourage people to disclose if there's no need to do so. Now, at the same time, if it's something where, let's say you have to, you have an appointment with a therapist, like at a specific time during work hours, and you really can't, you have to do that, that's something that, you have to. If the employer asks, well, why do you need to, be out of work at this specific time? You do have to explain why. And if they ask, to disclose because it's related to, treatment with a therapist for mental health.
But couldn't you be more vague about it, though, Gary? Couldn't I just say I go to therapy once a week? You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to tell them what you're going to therapy for, but I go to therapy. It could be the fact that I've got a chaotic family, or it could be that I've got childhood trauma, or it could be that I have anxiety. I mean, nothing that would get in the way of your job. But could you just blanketed say, like, is that enough for an employer to clear you if you're like, I got to go to therapy? I don't know. Is that not enough to just say that?
Yeah. Melissa, that's a good question. If it's enough for the employer, then that's fine. But if the employer says, you know, we really need you, that just that saying, I just go to therapy, going to therapy is not a disability. And the fact, you know, a lot of people do therapy that has really nothing to do with a disability. But the employer doesn't have to allow that unless and until it's something that would meet the definition of disability. So if the, you know, employer says why, and, you know, then to explain, you know, I suffer from depression or something that would trigger the fact that you have a disability that provides you with the right to accommodation in the workplace, then the question becomes, would it be an undue hardship in any way for the employer?
What about if you are, and this is where, I mean, I understand if you're an influencer, I get it. And look, to some degree, I sort of have to be because I work in the radio, and I'm very open about the fact that I think therapy is healthy, regardless of what you've got going on or don't have going on. I think it's great. So I'm an advocate to it. I don't tell you what I go to therapy for, but I'm very open about telling people that therapy is I think a good thing. I think you should vet who you go to see. I mean, like, I could go down that rabbit hole with you, and I've talked about it on the show before. But social media, you know, if you're somebody who likes to post, you know, I just got out of this session, or I'm doing this, or you're kind of, I guess, just feeding the internet your personal life. Can employers, I guess, reference that or take into consideration what you are posting and then make decisions based off of that, or no?
Social media is fair game. As far as in the job
search process. It is. I was wondering if it was. Yeah. I mean, I'd imagine you're being public.
Yeah. And so what I advise clients is to be very careful, particularly if in the job search process, to be careful what they've posted on social media. For example, you know, they post something about the breast cancer walk they did, you know, because their mom had breast cancer. Okay. And that's something that, you know, it's part of their identity. Something they're doing that's very good, but I warn them, you know, that that's something that if the employer says, uh-oh, wait a minute, and then, you know, there may be a genetic predisposition, don't assume that that's something that necessarily, it's not like the employer is going to say, that's why we didn't hire you, but there's always some risk. Now, on the flip side of that, you know, and that's also discussion about whether it's therapy or about their medical condition. You know, clients have told me that's part of who I am. That's my identity. I don't want to conceal it. I'm not ashamed of it. In fact, I'm proud of how I've dealt with it. That's what I think individuals have to balance, but just recognize there's some risk with that. Now, I've also, you know, worked with clients who, you know, their employers, you know, kind of embrace them and encourage people to be, to come forward. But as long as people recognize there's some risk, and particularly in the job search process.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Gary Phelan, I appreciate you talking about some of these subjects, because I think there is sometimes a gray area of what you should or shouldn't disclose and what, you know, could be a risk to your employment or getting hired somewhere. So I appreciate you talking about this more in length here on the show.